Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q1 FY22 earnings conference call of Titan Company Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Venkat, MD of Titan Company Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone on the call. It was a very satisfying quarter for Titan Company, as the presentation reveals. As usual, the people of Titan Company, the extended Titan organization, from the employees of the subcontractors and carriers and all the retail store staff, all the sales staff of distributors and sales and distribution organization, and of course, all the employees came together to deal with the consequences of the second COVID wave. In terms of overall sales performance and margin management and profit performance, it's been a very encouraging quarter. We are very confident about the balance 9 months of the year. The level of vaccination, I just checked today, we are at, I think, 46 crore people have been vaccinated. In the 18+ age group, it's 43%, I'm told. At current rate of vaccination, we expect 75%-80% vaccinations by end of September. Therefore, from an overall safety perception point of view, it's a good sign, and it will open up the door to demand in various categories, including lifestyle categories such as ours. Barring any other unforeseen or the consequence that relating to COVID, which is anyway not in our hands, we are pretty upbeat about the balance year. Now I would request Ashok Sonthalia, who's here now in the first meeting as the CFO of Titan Company. Welcome, Ashok, to share some thoughts before we start the Q&A.
Thank you, Venkat. Good evening and hello to all of you. It's really wonderful to be talking to you, my first meeting as Venkat said. While Venkat gave you some details on our overall performance in the just concluded quarter, I wanted to brief you about some updates on our subsidiaries and on gold hedging approach. We had incorporated Titan Commodity Trading Limited, and I'm very happy to inform you that TCTL started operating in this quarter, and Titan has started hedging its gold through TCTL completely. Titan also established a 100% subsidiary in USA this quarter to further its business interest, particularly of Tanishq jewelry business in that geography. Now coming to our approach to gold hedging, while there is no change in Titan's philosophy of not taking any price exposure on the gold that we have, we have made a change which is effective from July 1, 2021. Earlier, we used to hedge cash flow arising out of sale of gold inventory and accounted for it under cash flow hedging methodology. With the volatility in cash flow due to sales volatility due to stores closures, etc., observed during last year as well as this year, there were mismatches in hedges which created ineffectiveness of hedges and created volatility in financial performance on quarter-on-quarter basis. We have now decided to hedge the gold inventory itself instead of cash flow arising out of sale of inventory in future. And this shift will minimize and bring in more certainty to our hedging activity, and the chances of mismatches in the hedges will get minimized. The old outstanding contracts that are open as on 30th June 2021 would continue to be under cash flow method till the year closure, and all the new contracts from July 1st are under fair value method. We have included these details on slide number 36 and 37 of the investors presentation uploaded on stock exchanges and on our website. So you can look at them for more details if you could not capture whatever I spoke about. Another last point before we open the floor for question and answer, that in view of the stricter regulation on disclosure coming into play, in this call we will not be able to share specific growth, revenue growth number for July. While we will be providing you a qualitative picture of that, but a specific growth number we will not be able to provide. So with that, we can open the floor for question and answer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Percy Panthaki from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. A couple of questions from my side. So in terms of store openings over the next 2-3 years, could you give some idea on what would be the proportion between metro, tier 1, tier 2 towns, etc.? I mean, I'm not looking at exact figures, but what I'm trying to understand is that the store split of the current stores that you have now, will the store openings be in roughly the same proportion, or it's going to be materially skewed towards any particular pop strata?
Thanks, Percy. I think the opportunity for Titan Company in middle India and below is very, very high. A lot of stores that we have opened in the last 2-3 years are certainly in smaller and smaller towns, and we expect that to happen.
So when you open stores in smaller towns and your overall mix of total store shifts over a period of time, does it have any implications either on your sales per store or on your profit margins?
The sales per store obviously is lower in smaller towns, I mean, as we increase in smaller towns. But it is not as if the growth opportunity in large cities is low either. For example, our largest jewelry store, which is in Delhi, has grown handsomely in the last few years, even when we are opening a store in Ganganagar or Yamuna Nagar in Haryana, for example. So they have a sort of compensating effect. And the leverage is what we are, pushing as opposed to per store sale. And the individual store economics in terms of asset turn as well as margin are anyway sort of built into the system through our terms of trade and all that. So there is no worry sitting there.
Okay. So apart from this, I mean, for any reason whatsoever, let's say once the COVID disruption is fully out of the way, your margins for your jewelry business, I think before COVID, for 2 years, you had averaged somewhere in the region of 12.5% EBIT margins for jewelry. So once the COVID disruption is completely out of the picture, is there any reason why you would not go back to those margin levels in jewelry?
There is no reason why we would not go back to those margin levels.
Okay, that's all from me, sir. Thanks and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chirag Shah from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for question taking my question. At the outset, I also wanted to congratulate Ashok and good to have you, sir, on this call. I wanted to take a step back and understand how we are thinking of managing franchisee economics. Titan has, of course, benefited from the low-cost model that we have. But for our franchisees, operating leverages worked against them in this pandemic period. Given this, is there any change in franchisee economics that we are that is needed going forward? And last time we also spoke about how we are institutionalizing management of cash and balance sheet within the company beyond the CEO minus two levels. How are we thinking of institutionalizing the same within the franchisees? and how do we think of improving inventory turns for the franchisees? I'm wondering some of the digital initiatives that you have taken recently would also help them in higher inventory turns for them.
Certainly, the leverage advantage that a corporation like Titan has, an independent businessman does not have. And therefore, when the sales fell in FY 2021 and even during FY 2022, now there is an impact on the economics, I mean, on the financial performance. But fortunately, over the years, we've built, you know, robust businesses in most of the franchises. And last year, as well as to some extent this year, we stepped in with the loans, grants, and sort of helped them buffer the situation. And because of the overall cumulative prosperity that, you know, they have, Titan Brands have delivered to them, it was not an issue. They could sort of take it on their chin and move forward. So that is, therefore, we have not had to make any structural change to the terms of trade of business and therefore increase, let's say, our cost of retailing and distribution. So that's the first point. The second one is, actually, individual businessmen are quite savvy in the management of cash, actually, and we don't really need to teach them. We often find, if I take the jewelry business, for example, where we have these two different formats, L2 and L3, which is a buy and sell versus company stock, we often find that the stock turns of the franchisees who own the stock for comparable turnover bands is actually better, because they are there on the ground managing it, and it makes so much more. And the cost of borrowing is much more than for us on the gold on lease and all that. So there is really nothing that we have, you know, plans of teaching them, as you say. But the principles of stock management, for example, in the watches and wearables division, we have taken the whole theory of constraints principle all the way down to all the franchisees so that it's a flow system where what, you know, sales get replenished and how long it took to sell is considered before it is reordered and stuff like that to manage the asset turn. And in jewelry, the same principles of what we use in the consignment L2 management agent. We have now created a team in head office for the franchisee L3 to help transfer all these best processes to them as well.
Sure, sure. And also, can you touch upon the two key growth levers we have? One, you know, we speak about the Many Indias program to increase the state-level relevance. And just on the second part, the Golden Harvest scheme, enrollments in FY 2020 have been uneven for obvious reasons, and that would understandably result in some volatility in revenues in the current year. But can you just give us a sense of how enrollments are moving in the current year on the Golden Harvest scheme?
Yeah. Hi, Chirag. Ajoy here. Enrollments, obviously, in the month of May, everything was shut, but June and even later on in July, the pickup has been good. So enrollment has kicked in well, and it is continuing to ramp up. So hopefully, going forward, it should be a good base that we will rebuild. In quarter one, I must certainly share that since last year, quarter one was a disrupted quarter, therefore enrollments were not there. Therefore, the opening base of matured accounts were limited. So to that extent, that engine was understandably a lower contributor to sale in quarter one. But
right,
going forward, the enrollments look good. On the part about, let's say, trying to win in different parts of the country, and Tamil Nadu, which has been our strategic market, has continued to fire well. And we have also done a lot more localized activity in what we call as Bharat markets, which is really UP, Bihar, Jharkhand, MP, Orissa, and that has also been working well this year as well, with a lot of localized activities. We are also exploring a couple of more markets in the current year, but we are waiting for things to stabilize and see if the momentum is right for us to intervene in those markets going forward. But overall, that approach, what we kind of crystallized a lot more last year, we are continuing with that state-level kind of customized plans. But it's going on well, and it has really helped us a lot in the states where we've done a lot of this work.
Sure. And just one last question, if I may. In the annual report, if you see while the Golden Harvest fixed deposit, which is held as a reserve, as a proportion of Golden Harvest related liability has gone up materially. Just wondering if that is to do with any regulatory change that has happened?
As per rules, 20%, but I can look at your specific number.
That number is for FY21, that number has gone up to 28%, which is why I'm asking this question.
I will get back to you on it after checking that.
Sure. Sure. I will join back the queue. Thank you very much, guys, and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vivek Maheshwari from Jefferies. Please go ahead. Mr. Maheshwari, your line is in talk mode. Kindly go ahead with your question, please. As there is no response from the current participant, we move to the next question from the line of Abhi Mehta from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hi, Venkat. Hi, Ashok. Welcome to the board. I just had two questions just taking up on the demand recovery, trying to get a sense. Would you say that gold jewelry kind of would come back as customers have not been able to purchase due to shops being closed? Is that what you would expect as we go forward into the year? Is that the reason for your, relative bullishness? And if it is, would you be able to share any guidance on the sales for the 9 months as we go forward?
So, hi, Avi. Ajay here.
Hi, Ajay.
Yes, there has been... we have seen a certain, what I would call as pent-up demand on account of gold jewelry, even studded jewelry, on account of missed milestones in the period of lockdown, as well as, let's say, typically people wanting to buy during Akshaya Tritiya were not able to buy. So we have seen evidence of that in June, and it is continued in July. How the rest of the quarter will look like, it's kind of difficult to give a guidance, but given what we are seeing, it is we are also seeing a good, at least for us, we are seeing a lot of new customers also walk in, and the contribution of new customers as well as the absolute growth that we are seeing in new customers is also giving us a lot of confidence. And the third piece which I would like to share here is these milestones I talked about, birthdays and anniversaries, This is now becoming a growing trend for us. It is, one is of course a spike that you see immediately after unlocking, but I think as a process we have become a little better at managing that. So that is amongst the repeat customers is also growing up. So I think we have more than just the pent-up demand as a basis. And there are weddings demand which anyway, people are advancing their purchases because they don't know when wave 3 may come, if it comes, etc. So these are some of the demand drivers.
Okay. Guidance on recovery by when? Nothing like that, right? You would not be comfortable? That's the answer.
Yeah, not on this call.
Not on this call. Okay. And so secondly, on the margin front, I mean, there were, in the last call, you highlighted towards some discounting pressures from other peers. Is that now behind us? Is that a fair understanding?
See, discounting has always been there last year, this year, and nowhere have we actually slipped on margin on account of that piece. I mean, competitive intensity continues to be high. Post-unlocking, most players in the market have been on aggressive offers, but we followed whatever we think was right to do, and we followed our schedule. So it's okay. I mean, that will continue.
It's an operating aspect of the industry.
Okay, sir. And lastly, sir, just a bookkeeping on this change in hedging. Does this in a way require us to increase the number of hedges that we keep on book? I mean, would that be a right understanding or that was not correct?
No, I don't think that's the right understanding because it is just, that instead of the inventory which was exposed to price risk and we were hedging the cash flow in future out of that inventory, now we are hedging inventory itself. So it basically brings in more certainty that what hedges we are doing and tagging to the exposed inventory, which is for price. You know, kind of bring in through GOL, which are naturally hedged inventory. So that proportion is, we are not foreseeing meaningful change. If that proportion changes, then in any case, you know, we have to hedge the remaining inventory. So again, this is operating and very tactical, month to month, week to week, quarter to quarter. But this system doesn't bring in any structural change into amount of hedges need to be taken.
Okay, it's just an accounting thing. Got it, sir. Clear. So the unhedged and ineffective hedges is now behind us. That's the takeaway. Okay, sir. Thanks a lot. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the lineup of Avnish Roy from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. My first question is on TCL North America. So 12 years back, you had exited USA. So want to understand what has changed, and if you could discuss any numbers here in terms of investment or losses. Is there any learning from Carrot Lane international business, which has increased 9x YOY? Is that giving more confidence? Because the US market in 11 years could have become much more competitive now. So if nothing worked, then you had highlighted that you want to focus on India. And US, the markup is much higher. So if you could discuss these points.
Yeah, thanks, Avnish. For various reasons which were valid in 2006-2007, we decided to target the mainstream American consumer with Tanishq. Okay. And we went into malls. We created a product line which was totally American, global in terms of styling. Took an unknown brand into the American market. At that time, we felt that we could make a success because the proposition that we had was differentiated, and we felt that there was a decent space in the American market for that. There was a decent space. Everybody who came into the Tanishq store loved the entire value proposition that we had put together, from product design to range to quality to the customer experience, to the store design and all that, and we had very good customer feedback. But the biggest challenge that we had not visualized that well was the investments that we needed to make to generate the walk-ins, build the brand and generate traffic into the stores. And even as we were starting to grapple with it, the global financial crisis struck, and we realized that it's going to be a long haul, and many tens of crores would have had to be sort of lost before we saw light. And Titan Company was in a very different situation in 2008. So that was the reason for closure at that time. Now the incorporation that you're referring to is for making a serious play in the NRI PIO market of North America. And just in 10 years, there has been, even at that time, the NRI PIO market was large. I won't go into the reasons why we chose not to go there then, but I'm telling you why we are choosing to go there now. The per capita GDP of the NRI PIO is $100,000 USD in a country which is $65,000. And the NRI PIOs are more Indian than, Indians living in India. And the connection with the culture of India, the festivals to India, even the functions, the marriages are celebrated with pomp, the Holi and Diwali and all that, there's a lot of socializing that happens. And we ourselves know in India, the NRI traffic during, December month and all really peaks. So we now playing in a very different category, which is pretty large. Our sense is that it may be $3-4 billion at least. And the market is pretty unorganized. And we believe that we can hit the ground running. We can get very decent ticket sizes, very good diamond jewelry share, and also a lot of prestige by, upping the game in terms of, style quotient. So all in all, the game that we're going to play now is very different. The Tanishq brand is very strong in the NRI PIO consciousness. We have done a fair amount of research to make sure that when we go in, people are waiting there to welcome us, just like it has happened in Dubai after many, many years. So Therefore, the market opportunity very different, the strategy is very different, the competitive advantage is something else compared to, you know, unknown brand fighting big, you know, global brands at that time, huge desirable brand fighting mostly local players this time. So that's a big difference.
Sure. My second question is on closure of stores. So you have closed five stores in different formats. So one near, two WOT and two in Fast Track. So if you could discuss the reasons and is this because more focus on digital or online you want to drive?
Abneesh, we have 1,800 stores plus Abneesh. We can't help not close some of them every year. I mean, it is like that. It's just a regeneration of the system. There's nothing particular to note. It's not a material number from a network size point of view.
And last quick one. So you have pointed that in jewelry, last year you saw a quick turnaround, quick footfall recovery. And you have said this time even in watch you have seen that. And eyewear. So what is driving this? So essentially is it more of base effect or there is a faster sentiment improvement?
Hi, this is Suparna here. Yeah, I think the consumer sentiment has been faster to recover. And we see that across all channels in the watches division. So whether it is multi-brand outlets or the large format stores, and certainly in our retail stores, consumers have come back faster. And that's at an overall level. It took longer for people to, you know, come back to buying after the COVID wave last year. This year has been much better.
And Agnish, last year there was no vaccine. This year there is a vaccine. I mean, I was in Punjab last week and I mean, so many people on the road, so many people in this famous you know, restaurant called Haveli. So the fear of COVID, even though the tragedy of COVID was greater this year, but the fear of COVID is much less because the vaccine is the protection shield. And that's what I'm sure is affecting the, influencing the recovery across categories.
Sure, that's quite helpful. That's all from me. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kunal Vora from BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. First question, with mandatory hallmarking now effective from June, what's been the experience over the last 40 to 50 days? How strictly are the rules being followed in the large cities versus small cities? And what are the benefits you would expect in the near to medium term?
Yeah, so hallmarking is mandated, yes. We have been compliant right from day one across, you know, all our stores, whichever city it is. There is some amount of disruption in the supply chain in terms of production, post-production, because there is a new system of, in a way, you know, capturing the hallmarking UID number through some centralized system that is resulting in some significant bottlenecks, which BIS is trying to address. So that is the main impact currently of hallmarking. Meanwhile, jewelry associations continue to kind of lobby for a certain deferment, delay, etc. We are carrying on the way it is, and we have you know, expanded our operations suitably to cover up for these delays. Now, the benefit for us, well, in the long, I think HUID is a good move, because it will really bring transparency and some credibility to the hallmarking piece. So tomorrow as a customer, if you are able to use that number and check where it was hallmarked, etc., it gives a certain, so you will prevent any contamination in the hallmarking process. And BIS also seems to be pretty clear that they are going around checking the quality of hallmarking and all of that in the initial years, in the initial months and weeks, so that there is no hanky-panky. So we think this will be good for formal organized players who are operating on clear purity, etc. And eventually, I think the entire industry will kind of get into that mode, which is good. And if it's good for the customer, it's good for the industry, it's good for all of us. So it will be beneficial.
Sure, okay. Second question regarding CaratLane, what is the store count potential for this brand? And would it remain focused on jewelry alone, or would you consider extending it to other luxury products?
We have Mithun here, who is the managing director of CaratLane. It will be wonderful to hear him share his thoughts.
Could you, the first part, did you ask me the current store count?
Yeah. The current store
count. No, store count potential. Potential. Like, where do you think, like, what could be the potential store count for this brand?
Yeah, so if you consider that the stores are roughly about 1,000 square feet, and we are currently in only 44 towns with depth in about 16 towns only, you could put any multiplier to that and we would find a lot of potential if we look at just India alone. Beyond that, if the second question that you had was around, sorry, could you repeat the second one?
Yeah, I was wondering whether this brand can be extended to other luxury products. So right now you're doing jewelry, but can you extend it to other luxury products as well?
It could be, but hasn't crossed our mind yet. Thank you for bringing it to our notice.
Sure. And like one last question, if I can, like, so for FY22, how do we look at jewelry and watches business revenue compared to FY20? Would you say that like for jewelry, 15% kind of CAGR over FY20 is possible, or is it too ambitious? Also in watches, if you can share, when do you expect to get to FY20 level of sales?
Actually, we had reached FY20 level of sale in Q4 of FY21. And then we were gunning for a good growth in all the businesses in FY22 till wave 2 came. I think in the 9 months, I think we should be gunning for certainly matching and exceeding is what we would gun for. Plus, do not take it as a guidance.
Okay. Are you saying that you can do a good CAGR, double-digit CAGR, or you are saying that FY20 number can be matched?
No, no, because last year was a drop, no? So CAGR
sure.
Be just a point-to-point growth.
Okay, sure. That's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Aditya Soman from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead. Mr. Soman, your line is in talk mode. Kindly go ahead with your question, please. As there is no response from the current participant, we move to the next question from the line of Krishnan Sambamurthy from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Venkat, last year, particularly the second half, you saw a significant bunching up of wedding demand. Also benefits of things like lack of overseas travel, therefore putting greater income in the hands of the customer. Like, you expect something similar in the current year as well?
The overseas travel part, from whatever we are sensing, is still a big constraint. While the people's moods have improved, vaccine and all that, but the governments continue to be strict about visa. And therefore, for example, even for our own launches, stores in Dubai and US and all that, we are not able to step out of this country. So I suspect that that advantage will remain for a while. Weddings, I'm not clear. Maybe Ajoy can speak.
I think wedding demand will be stronger in the second half. It's already there because people are advancing their purchases, not knowing when wave 3 will hit, and therefore, you know, getting on with it. But having said that, certainly like last year, we think wedding demand will be stronger in the second half because people have missed out in the first quarter.
Understood. The second part, while Ashok did highlight that you don't want to give July numbers and so on, could you share store operating days data similar to what you've given for April, May and June?
Sorry, what data?
Store operating days.
Store operating days.
July, see,
weekends.
Again, it's about 80-90% for jewelry, and it's in that around the mid 80% kind of number.
For watches, it is around between 75 and 80.
Because of the malls.
Because of the malls, And there are lots of states where there is, you know, alternate days, and so it's certainly much below 80.
Garrett Lynn, Mithun says it's 88%.
Also, I feel that because the public is also now starting to become reasonably well aware of this, the sales must be getting distributed over the days in which stores are open. So you may not be able to use this, frankly, beyond a point for any practical calculus.
I would strongly suggest not to use that data because the correlation is not standing out. What Venkat said is borne out by data. So we should look at total month sale only.
Okay. Just one final question. Ashok, can you explain what's the role that Titan Commodities Trading Limited, with what does it play in the hedging process?
So it's a registered broker with NCX in a way. So earlier, you know, if you remember, we used to deal with other brokers, including Carvey, and we had a bad experience there. Some of our money got stuck. And just to avoid that risk, we kind of created our own entity. Titan is a sizable player as far as gold bullion hedging is concerned. So apart from avoiding that risk, of course, we are saving some more, you know, brokerages, BG charges, etc. So those are small amounts, you know. That was not the motivation. Motivation was to avoid the risk of a counterparty in this kind of transaction.
Understood. Very clear. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Amit Sajdeva from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, and thank you so much for taking my questions. And congratulations on good set of numbers in the disrupted quarter, especially margins, if I may say, on the jewelry. I just wanted to, Ashokji Ajoy, if I can get some clarity on jewelry margin. I remember last quarter, there was a one-off, expenses or at least write-off on account of the custom duty reduction that had already happened and impacted quite sizable amount in Q4. And if I remember correctly, Subbu had said that part of it would be also affecting this quarter. And if I were to say two-third, one-third, I just wanted to know that what kind of custom duty impact would have still hit in this quarter, and can you quantify that in terms of EBIT impact?
So I'll take that, Amit.
So
we were actually expecting to absorb a much larger component of custom duty impact in quarter one, but because sales itself are much lower, that amount is also much lower. Coincidentally, some of that loss has got set off by what we call as a FIFO gain, which is on account of gold rate valuation. So actually in this quarter, those two amounts are cancelling each other out. Okay, so you're not seeing any impact of that. And they happen to be pretty much the same number, give or take a crore here and there.
Yeah, but sure. Just to add to Ajoy, there will be something going into quarter two now, but now amount is not significant where we call out specifically what that amount is, but some carry forward to quarter two will happen.
Okay, but that would be, I would say, I would guess, would be marginal and not really very meaningful, which at least a bit margin level. Would it be safer assumption?
It should not be very, very meaningful, but we will kind of let you know.
Meaningful, but not material.
Not material, yeah.
Okay, no, that's very, very helpful. Thank you so much for clarifying this. My second question is, obviously, talked about demand and the fact that you would not be very specific about July. But I would also gather that July month is split into two halves, and first half July typically is a very bland and very lackluster anyway, structurally and cyclically. And it's only the second half of July that takes off. So my question is, and also there's a growth vector of metro demand and tier two, tier three demand, which has been divergent at least last year, and I would guess Q4 where metro demand would have come back as well. But could you give us some picture of how the July has progressed on first half, second half dynamic, and second, tier two, tier three or smaller town versus metro dynamic? And are you seeing this trend sustaining? Some color would be really helpful, Ajoy.
Yeah, okay. So actually, this time round, first half was much better than the usual, because there were still quite a few wedding dates available till 17th of July or so. And then after that, the Adi Ashad month started, so demand actually slowed down. So the first half was quite good for wedding, and therefore also more for plain gold. Advanced in the north market, for example, our studded activation, which we usually do towards the end of July, and then it goes on all the way to mid-September. This time, because of momentum as well as uncertainty of wave three, in the north markets, we have advanced it by about a week, and therefore we saw good opening traction to that. And then the rest of the markets followed in the you know, in the last few days of July, and that has also seen a good response on the studded activation. To give you a sense on metro and tier 2, tier 3, this time round, because Bombay, Delhi, you know, and some of the north and other north and west markets have been good. Ahmedabad, you know, I think we are seeing a better response this year because some of these markets were badly impacted last year. Tier 2, tier 3 towns are certainly recovering also pretty well, but the metros and the mini metros have started punching their weight a little earlier this year than last year. So, therefore, overall, you know, most markets are firing well, barring a few states which have got, you know, which are still impacted. Three or four states which are impacted.
Okay, great. So that's very, very helpful, Ajoy. Thank you so much and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amit.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sirish Pardeshi from Centrum Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Venkat, and welcome, Mr. Sonthalia. I have three questions. The first question is on the jewelry part. If you could talk about the mix, how this has fared in this quarter, maybe that would be very helpful.
So, hi, this is Ajay here. So the studded mix, I guess that's what you're referring to.
Yes.
In the quarter, you know, we have seen on retail, I'm just giving you a retail flavor because on primary sales, etc., it is a little different. But on retail, I'll give you a sense. It's 25% has been the studded mix in this quarter. This compares to 21% last year, which was impacted quite a bit. And the year before last, it was at around 28%. So the studded recovery is better than last year, but yet to catch up, at least for quarter one figures.
Still a few you percentage. Have advanced the designs in the northern market.
No. That is in July. This is referring to quarter one. So there is no impact of any activation in quarter one.
Got it. Thank you. My second question is on watches. When I see the slide 47 and 48, I think you have reported a very strong volume growth. So maybe if you can help, what is the volume absolute quantity in the quarter? And the related question on that is that despite higher volume growth, the EBIT is not showing that momentum. So could you talk something about the mix, how which segment has done better or lower?
Yeah, so this is Suparna here. The volume growth is actually on a very dismal quarter one last year, where we had very, very low sales. Like I mentioned earlier, last year, the watches, the consumer sentiment was very weak and the recovery was very slow. So I think the 466 should not be seen in any other context except that the base was terribly low. Can you just repeat the second question?
What does it explain the lower growth in EBIT?
The EBIT is actually, last year we had a loss of 164 crores in quarter one. This year we've had a loss of 56 crores. And it's largely, to a very large extent, explained by a much better top line performance this year in quarter one as opposed to last year. So that's the difference in the EBIT.
Okay. So, but just one follow-up on watches. What is the variable contribution now in this quarter one? Or maybe if you can talk about last two, three quarters, how it should be?
The variable contribution is still less than 5% in the overall value, but it is growing year on year. The growth in wearables is higher than the growth in watches. Even the recovery on wearables so far has been better than in watches, but it's on a very small base.
Okay. My last question is to Ajay. While speaking to few of the channel partners across geography, what we are also seeing, and you also acknowledge that the industry participants are pushing the deferment of hallmarking, but how truthful is there? What their thought is that if it is deferred, probably they can sell off the inventory, and if that doesn't happen in an extreme situation, we expect, I mean, people are saying that there could be a discounting which will happen. I mean, there is no need of discounting, but obviously the lower carat gold which is there in the inventory, probably you will see more heightened promotion. So in that scenario, how do you see the competition behaving, normally, abnormally, or heightened?
So we were also anticipating, because of this, you know, in July, August, the 2 month window given by the ministry to kind of, you know, get all your stocks hallmarked or sold, we were expecting a lot more competitive intensity discounting. So it is pretty much the way it has been. I don't see any further, you know, it's not taking it up much more. But I'm sure the industry is also seeing some good growth in the month of July, and they are also hopefully going to see good growth in the month of August, so they should be better off. In any case, even after that, the window doesn't close. You can just go and get your opening stock all marked, yeah, which is what we did in the first place, so that when on, as on 1st July, everything was already hallmarked. So I'm not seeing much. In fact, the greater, let's say the greater issue here is, as we build up towards festive season, October, November, everybody is going to start upstocking. And in that period, therefore, the entire supply chain is coming under some stress due to this hallmarking HUID process. And that bottleneck can actually create greater chaos for the rest of the players. And in that sense, maybe, you know, because we are a little better prepared for it, we may have some marginal gains there.
But you don't anticipate that it will take a little different turn in around festive season?
I don't think so. I think the ministry seems to be very confident and clear. Mithun wants to add something to this.
The government has also plugged that 8 in by August 15th. It was originally July 30th, now it's August 15th. All opening stock, either by pieces or by grammage, has to be reported into the BIS portal as well. And so that doesn't allow for the scenario that you're looking at for it to play out.
Thank you for that commentary. But where I'm coming from, just to clarify, that there are some glitches even BIS is also acknowledging in terms of certification and on-the-ground infrastructure. So maybe because of that, I'm anticipating some kind of super competitive pressure which can happen.
Yeah, we don't know. I'm not sure about it.
The kind of you know, significant competitors that we play with, they're not the kind that you're describing. And surely customers would be wary of some local jeweler suddenly knocking off the stuff at some 30-40%. It'll only increase the worries that they already face about such you know, possible brand.
Sure, Venkat. Thank you, and all the best.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vishal from Philip Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, sir. Congrats on a good set of numbers. I have two questions, both are bookkeeping ones. Share of old exchange gold during this quarter and store opening guidance for finish during the FY22.
Yeah. So share of old gold exchange has been a little subdued since the last year. I think people's interest in bullion has not gone away, and therefore they've kind of... Also, because of the curtailed wedding-related purchases during this period, the total quantum, we see a lot more exchange during wedding purchases. So, we saw a good one in April, and then, you know, June was not really a great month for wedding-related purchases. So, to cut a long story short, the gold exchange percentage contribution to sale in quarter one this year was 24% compared to, let's say, 30% if I go to year before last. Last year, I think, is irrelevant. What is the second question you asked?
Store opening guidance for Tanishq for FY22.
Yeah, so we are targeting around 34 to 35 store openings, and we are pretty much on track for that. We have already opened, seven and another four. So totally, we have opened 11 so far as we speak for the current financial year.
Okay. And sir, most of them would be on a L3 kind of, it would be franchisee-based stores operation, L3 kind of format or, L2 kind of format or what can we do?
L2. Most of them are L2. A few will be L3 in very small towns.
Got it. Thank you so much and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rakesh Junjunwala from Rare Enterprises. Please go ahead.
Gopal, sir, you have said, and congrats on a fine performance, you have said that you will not give a quantification of the July sales. But how has been the trend? Has the recovery been good?
Yes, we have been good, Rakeshji.
Rakeshji, what is the amount of cash you are holding in your books on 30th June?
How much cash?
Cash.
As on 30th June, we have in excess of 2,000 crore, Rakeshji.
And what about Cableuba? Is it going on? Is it closed? Or is it still being expected?
Yeah. Cableuba, I mean, there are some procedural matters on the plate, but for all practical purposes, otherwise, it is closed. The entity still exists. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have not yet, you know, sold the entity, so to speak. But no investments ever since we decided to close it, other than winding down expenses that we had estimated and running to that plan.
I think, what is the effect on the, any effect on the IOA dividend? What are the vast quantity of money that the other companies raising? What is the main, I forget that online company which is now got offline stores also.
Lenskart.
The amount of money they've raised is quite amazing.
Yeah.
Is there a competitive effect on our IA division?
This is Shomil here, Mr. Jinjanola. The opportunity seems large enough, although they have been able to generate a lot of money and they are expanding, their business is doing well. Our business too actually is doing very well. We have also got a model which is quite sustainable. And we are looking at very rapid expansion across both in big cities as well as in the smaller towns. So prospects are very good. We are quite excited with this.
Also, Rakesh, you know, if you really think about it and, you know, even go to the stores and speak to customers, we are an expert in this business. You know, now the name for the division is I Care, not I Wear. So the expertise, that expertise plays in a particular space of the industry of the category, which is very, very large in any case. The competitors is playing in a way in the fashion space with a lot of youth, which is a different space. So to that extent, I think like Sherman says, the opportunities are different and equally large.
No, there's no question. The way the IOA division has been turned around, you see a big pat on your back, all of you. Especially Mr. Sherman.
You can tell that personally again to Sherman and Rakesh.
Thank you. Steve, what did you say?
You can tell Sherman once again about this application.
Sure, sir. It's been a remarkable thing. Titan has been trying for 10, 15 years, but they couldn't produce a profit. And second, I personally feel this is a very large market with a very big potential.
Yes, without doubt.
Second thing I want to say is that are we going to continue with all this Taneira and, you know, the sale is 14 crores a quarter? I mean, does it make it the size of our company after trying for 3 years, 4 years?
Of course, we want to make Taneira in the, you know, ethnic wear industry what we made with Tanishq in the jewelry industry, Rakesh. That's our ambition. We're very, very clear about what levers of Taneira are working. The women who bought Taneira just love Taneira. They've not seen saris like that anywhere. The scale has been held back also because of the last 18 months of COVID. But we will speak soon at an appropriate occasion about the ambition for Taneira. Without doubt, it's going to go somewhere else. You just wait and watch and you will applaud from the sidelines.
And how's the perfume business doing?
Perfume business is doing very well, but at the moment when people are all sitting at home, you know, you and I are the only two people who seem to be going out, Rakesh. Most people are sitting at home and therefore the need for perfumes is a little less, you know. So I think it's just a matter of time, January, when all of us, you know, the nation is vaccinated, socializing starts. People also should start working, hybrid working as opposed to just sitting at home and working. That's a constraint for some categories like perfumes. But we are very, very...
Any
know about the business.
Any plans to add items to fast track?
In terms of categories, not yet. We want to actually make the fast track, for example, the perfume business of fast track much bigger. The bags business, you know, you may not be aware that we are into girl. We make very, very, you know, wonderful bags for girls, fashion bags. we want to make that big. So not enter any new category, but make much bigger. And the basic point you were making, that some of these categories are so small in a company of such a large size, you are very right. And it's our collective, me and three of the heads of those businesses, to make these much, much bigger, much more prestigious, much more profitable from the company's point of view.
Maybe I suggest that all things large start small.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you so much and welcome, Mr. Sonthalia.
Thank you
for answering questions and best of luck.
Thank you, Rakesh.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jay Kumar Doshi from Kotak. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for the opportunity. My question is again on the eyewear business. If you look at Lenskart, they scaled up from 150 crore to about 900 crore top line in a span of 4 to 5 years. And recently, they were valued at $2.5 billion. So just want to understand, what are the growth aspirations, you know, that we have for Titan Eyewear? And what are the investments you're making to sort of strengthen the omni-channel play, especially on, you know, the digital side? And we see a lot of thrust from Tata Group on building digital assets. Just want to understand what are Titan's plan for Titan Eyewear.
In the last 18 months, we have established some of the basic things that were kind of ailing us. Having done that, we are getting into a rapid expansion mode, both in the top 7-8 cities as well as in the rest of India. So therefore, if today our network is at 622, in 2 to 3 years' time, it crossing 1,000 won't be surprising at all, maybe even earlier. Plus, we have also sort of cleaned up our trade channel, which is the multi-brand outlets. And we are seeing a significant scope for actually playing both the channels, EBO and MBO combination. So therefore, outlook for the business actually could be very strong, meaning our last 5-year projection was somewhere around 1,800-2,000 crores. That was when the last presentation was shared some 3 years back, I suppose. I do not have a number or anything in mind right now, but I think we feel very strongly about the category given the opportunity that is available as well as the digital exposure people are going through the last 18 months.
Understood. Is there any gap in product portfolio? Because when I look at the store count of 750 and top line of 900,000 crores versus 600 and 500 crore top line, so there seems to be, there may be some B2B component, distribution component, but at a product portfolio level, do you how do you sort of benchmark yourself?
We had certain gaps in the lower end of the price point. I think in the last 6 to 8 months, we have more or less filled it. And we therefore today don't see any real gap in the portfolio side. And of the two brands that we use in the frame segment, which is Titan and Fastrack, Fastrack is also going to scale up the play very, very soon and significantly so.
Thank you. Good luck with that. All the best. And one bookkeeping question on other expenses. Now, and this is, you know, the other expenses that you sort of report in the presentation on, it's on slide 40 this time. So this quarter was 240 crores. Last year, same quarter was 187 crores. And March quarter was 400 crores. So I just want to understand, what's the breakup between variable and, you know, fixed costs? Because it seems to be, a little bit lower than what I would have otherwise sort of anticipated or expected.
So, coming to the specifics, last quarter which you are referring to, of course, it was a very, very different quarter completely. April was complete closure. May was also, most of the time, everything was particularly shut down. So anything which comes under this category, whether it is software, whether it is professional services, whether it is some of the rent concessions we are also sitting here, traveling, zero. So those things were there in Q1 21, and that is what that number you see. Of course, this quarter was better off compared to last quarter one situation, and that is what you are seeing.
My question was slightly different. So from 400 crore in March, it has gone down to 240 crore in June. So there's a 40% decline. So, it's a fairly good optimization of cost, but is this... Is it because a large part of that is variable or?
No, it is not that large part of it. It is basically the travel, rent savings, professional services which we hire a lot, you know, in our factories as well as everywhere, all those things are there. So they are of course curtailed because of closure, etc. Like to like,
war on waste.
Yeah, and war on waste sustainable part is of course built in, which was done
between Q4.
I understand. Okay. Thank you so much.
So we'll take the last question, please.
Thank you. We take the last question from the line of Vivek Maheshwari from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Am I audible now?
Say if we can speak closer to the answer, please.
Is this better?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thanks. Good evening, everyone. My question is again on hallmarking. You know, 2-3 bits over here. So one on the hallmarking bit, over time, let's say in the medium term, if let's say one of the important USP of Tanishq was or has been around purity, if let's say the neighborhood stores start, selling hallmarked gold, wouldn't that change, you know, the perception in the minds of customers that, you know, from a purity standpoint, whether, you know, Tanishq or a neighborhood store, I mean, then the battle is or the competition is more on the designs. Is there a fair assumption?
You are right. Over a period of time, that will happen. But we have to compete on design. We have to compete on other practices. For example, when you take back gold, exchange gold, etc. But we also think because of this, they were currently parking some of their margin from making charges into purity. Over a period of time, they cannot sustain. They will land up having to take up their making charges. So in a way, this would then make our making charges more competitive. So that is my reading.
Yeah, and Vivek, for the last 3 decades, the exchange jewelry caratage has been in the 19.2 carats for Tanishq. Now that 2.8 carats is actually what Ajoy is talking about. And that 2.8 carat is something like 11%, 12%. And that will kick in, have to kick in, otherwise they'll go bust. That's one point. The second is, it's not only the purity, it is the Tata Trust. 50 years from now, I can come back to that store, the store will exist, I'll get my money back. Whereas with others, we don't know whether the store will exist, we don't know whether the money will come back. So that part is not, you know, spoken about so much, but it's very much there with customers. Plus, I mean, Tanishq is a brand which is aspirational, desirous. All that is may not be articulated by customers to in investing circles, but it's very much a power of the brand.
Got it. And the other part, I know this may not be the best forum, but if you can briefly elaborate, how does this hallmarking work? So let's say whether it's a Tanishq store or a neighborhood store, the gold physically actually goes out to a
actually,
center, comes
Vivek,
back?
Maybe offline or something. This
you,
is not the...
Yeah, you can reach out to me offline, Vivek. I'll walk you through it. Maybe through Pulkit or somebody from our investor relations. We can talk about it.
I will do that. And last bit, a small bit on hallmarking. Does this increase your cost in any ways in the medium term as it does for the industry, or it is, let's say, cost-wise, it's fairly neutralish for you as well?
It's negligible.
Okay. Got it. Thanks and wish you all the best.
Thanks, Vivek.
Thank you. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Venkat for his closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, everyone. As always, supportive, encouraging, probing, and leaving us with a good feeling at the end of it. So, au revoir, till we meet again.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Titan Company Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.